Box.com.
The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room. Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live in LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want, just do not call me late for dinner. And that was the Centurion in charge of production, Mr. Con Solar. Thank you very much. And if it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas, it's time for Subject to Discussion time. There you go. And once again, live in LVRocks.com and S2DRadio.com. And as well, as the program is now part of the Progressive Podcast Network. So I thank them for adding the program to their podcast listing over at the Progressive Podcast Network. And after the Political News Digest, we'll be joined by a little music interlude, and then Alan Stewart Carl will be on. He's from the Maverick Views blogspot.com blog, and he was on about a year or so ago, and I'll bring him back on to talk about what's going on in the world of politics from a moderate point of view. And then after him, in the second hour, we'll be joined by the mad rocket scientist of the program, Dr. Net Ranger from Media Boulevard and Media Boulevard Magazine, for a rundown of the week's pop culture stories and also what's coming in the week ahead of us. And then ending the program would be the mad professor of Subject to Discussion, Dr. Koenig Rules, with a review of the Doctor Who episode and Battlestar Galactica. And I think he also liked Heroes as well, so we'll delve into more of the sci-fi sides of pop culture. And before I get into the news digest, let's go through what's in the paper. We had the from today from the Las Vegas Review Journal. We had the they exhumed the body of Kathy Augustine, who's used to be the state controller here in Nevada, and exhumed the body of her third husband Charles, and to see if her fourth husband may have poisoned him with some of a drug that paralyzes them, because the Kathy Augustine was also killed with this paralyzing drug. So they exhumed the body this morning at about 7 a.m. and they're going to see if there's any traces of the drug in her third husband's body. And also I talk about the North Korea supposed nuclear test. Now I see there's some doubts whether it really was nuclear test or just some large underground explosion that they did to trick everybody. I'm not sure. And also on the side in the Review Journal, I talk about the outbreak shows flaw in U.S. food chain, because now the big concern is now with lettuce. And lettuce entertain you? No. And on the right, I talk about Titus and Gibbons, who are the candidates for governor, the Democrat and the Republican. And they had a debate last night at the Bally's Hotel, and they squared off in a debate. And in the Nevada section, they talk about the school shooting here in town. Monday in North Las Vegas. A 14-year-old Legacy High School student was shot in the leg while walking home from home after being left off by a school bus. So, and what else is on the bottom here? Blah, blah, blah. And up north, they're going to have an emergency deer hunt up in the fire-ravaged northern part of the state. So, and in the Las Vegas Sun section of the paper, again, Las Vegas Sun used to be a separate newspaper. Now it's just a section of the Las Vegas Review Journal. Talk about some guy named Scott Smith, new director of UNLV's Institute for Security Studies, blah, blah, blah. And in the USA Today, they talk about the nuclear showdown with North Korea as well. And then on the right to talk about Google buying YouTube for $1.65 billion. So I think I came to terms with a deal with Google to buy Subject to Discussion for $3.50. That'd be kind of nice. No, $350 million. And what else? And then on the side here, it's interesting. They have these little snapshots in USA Today. They talk about voting pros, senators who cast the most votes in the chamber. Robert Byrd, a Democrat, from 1959 to the present, over 17,700 votes, and he's been in that long. See, that's too long. I think three terms in the Senate and three terms in the House, and term limits, you should be gone. No, this, 47 years in the Senate. That's ridiculous. Strom Thurmond, 1954 to 2002, over 16,000 votes. Edward Kennedy, 1962 to now, over 14,600 votes. Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, 1963 to now, 14,656 votes. Ted Stevens, the guy who wants to build the bridge nowhere, from 1968 to the present, 14,000 votes. So isn't that ridiculous? Ted Stevens has been in 38 years in the Senate. That's horrendous. And as much as my Democrat, term limits, please. And in the life section, I talk about the box office, the top 10 in the box office. Also, MySpace is going to plan Sudan benefit concerts to raise money for the poor folks suffering over in the Sudan. And Oprah is going to have the Black Movie Awards. She's going to be Oprah. Angela Bassett, Kimberly Elise, and Rudy D will be presenters at the Film Life's 2006 Black Movie Awards. So, blah, blah, blah. Mary Hart re-upped her contract on Entertainment Tonight. So, and with that, we'll move on to the Political News Digest and talk about what's going on in the... Well, first of all, I had a little comment. This is going to be a little lighter comment than the heavy political stuff. Because all the new shows are on and everything, so I thought, what the hell? And I said, so tonight's special comment is about a TV series. This TV series starts off with a dark premise to the destruction of their civilization, and it manages to grab you, and you're hooked for the long haul. This small group of people, a sliver of their civilization that miraculously survived the nuking of their civilization, must now cope with what they have been dealt. Family relationships are strained. Personal relationships are challenged, and secrets are abound. Different people intersect with each other, and it creates a new dynamic on this series. A father and a son who have issues with each other work together for the survival of their people. The father, while he does have a heart, he is determined to see his people survive. His son, while having issues with his father, also shares his determination to ensure that his friends and other people survive what has been dealt to them. Yes, you get the idea. There is a lot more going on than we have been let in on right now. This series takes us away from our real-world problems here and into the problems that these people are facing. Their problems make ours seem meaningless. This series answers questions and then asks more questions, but not too much that you will be lost. It is a heavy series, but not so much that you'll need a companion to keep up. As you watch this series, you ask yourself, how would I react to what just happened? These people you are watching on the TV screen are surviving the best way they know how. From the younger characters to the older, you see how each of them are handling themselves in this situation. If any series is deserving of your time and attention this fall, it is this one that I am describing, and that series is Jericho on CBS. Wow. How'd you know I was going to say that? Wow. What if I ever said Galactica? You had the Cylons ready to go. Anyway, in the News Digest from today, scandals stymie W's momentum. This is from the New York Daily News from the Washington Bureau. Suddenly, like the fierce blue northers that sweep across Texas each autumn, the political winds have turned bleaker for Republicans, and President Bush's private mood has blackened accordingly. Just 2 weeks ago, as gasoline prices plummeted and his tough-talking terror counterattack began moving his poll numbers his way, Bush turned bullish on the November elections. Now, however, friends, aides, and close political allies tell the Daily News that Bush is furious with his own side for helping create a political downdraft that has blunted his momentum and endangered GOP prospects for keeping control of the Congress next month. Some of his anger is directed at former aides who helped Watergate journalist Bob Woodward paint a lurid portrait of a dysfunctional, chaotic administration in his new book, State of Denial. And in the obsessively private Bush clan, talking out of school is the ultimate act of disloyalty, and Bush feels betrayed from within. Wow. Yeah, he's looking more and more like he's resigned that the Democrats are going to take over the House and maybe also the Senate. So he's going to be in for nightmares the next 2 years. So, and also today from the New York Times, New Times poll, Foley and the War. Adam Nagorny, a national political correspondent, and Janet Eldard, director of the Times polling operations, report on the latest New York Times CBS News poll taken in the wake of the Foley Page scandal. For Republicans, the numbers are bleak and even bleaker for the Bush administration. Among the findings they write, number one, the Americans believe the Republican leadership of the House put their political interests ahead of the safety of teenage pages and were well aware of former Congressman Mark Foley's untoward behavior toward young men long before he was forced to resign. Nearly 70% of respondents, including a majority of Republicans, said that most members of Congress do not follow the same rules of behavior as average Americans. No kidding. And that can be also be said, I hate to say it, also for the Democrats. Once they get in at the Senate or the Congress, yeah, it's like they can't be touched. Like they're like little kings and a little fiefdom up there in D.C. And nearly 70%, again, including a majority of Republicans, said that most members of Congress consider themselves above the law. There you go. And 51% said the House Republican leadership handled the Foley case improperly, versus 27% who said they handled it properly. Nearly 50% said that House Speaker J. Dennis Hastert should step down. So it's unbelievable. What's that joke? They said that Foley's in, what's that joke now? He's in for alcohol rehab, but his problem isn't with Jack Daniels, it's with Jack and Daniel. And when he gets out of alcohol rehab, he can't wait to turn bend over a new page. Turn over a new page. So, I don't know. The jokes are flying about the Foley. You watch Letterman. Letterman's got some really strong ones the last few nights. So, Bush's downward slide from the Washington Post from today. President Bush's approval ratings appear to be dropping to their lowest levels ever. And this time, to the enormous apprehension of the White House, there's something voters can do about it. Officially, the White House refuses to even consider the possibility of a Democratic takeover of Congress in the November 7th elections. Maybe that's because it's hard for anyone, Bush fan or foe, to imagine how different a Bush presidency would be with a Congress that doesn't bend to his will and maybe even starts to question him. That's what I'm saying. Need them in, the Democrats, at least you have one House of Congress to be a check on the Bush administration. You know?
Next question.
Yeah. So, President
Next
Bush,
question.
Will you resign from office, President Bush?
Next question.
And then we'll be stuck with what Bush goes, and if Cheney goes, we'll be stuck with Hastert, so I don't know about that. And so, I mean, here, while too soon to count Karl Rove and the White House political machine out, it's going to be awfully hard for Bush to come to the rescue of his party when his lack of credibility is the cause of so many of its problems. So, yeah, he's really, and this whole thing with North Korea, I mean, you know, I just think he's got to talk. I mean, even when Bush 41 was in, you know, he talked, they had, what's his name, was flying all over the world, even talking to the enemies. How many trips did Baker make to Syria? You know, you got to have some kind of dialogue with your enemies, you know, it's, I think, but anyway. Also from today, GOP expects to lose between 7 and 30 House seats. Republican campaign officials said yesterday that they expect to lose at least 7 House seats and as many as 30 in the November 7th midterm elections. As a result of sustained violence in Iraq and the Page scandal involving Mark Foley, the Democrats need to pick up 15 seats in the election to take back control of the House after more than a decade of GOP leadership. And a sign that the political environment is getting worse for Republicans, political handicapper Charlie Cook now lists 25 GOP held seats as a toss-up, 7 more than before the Foley scandal broke September 29th. So this thing is just sending them down the hill, the Republicans. Also from today, from the blog, the Middle Earth Journal, total foreign policy failure. They say, with respect to the axis of evil, Steinberg said, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? It's clear that the answer is we're worse off with respect to the nuclear proliferation problem in both North Korea and Iran than 4 to 6 years ago. And he said, I would argue we're worse off in our overall security because of the situation in Iraq. And this is the final sentence, blah, blah. So in this is the final sentence in the Washington Post analysis of the Bush-Cheney foreign policy. Yeah, the Democrats should turn that back on the administration. Are you better off foreign policy-wise today than you were 4 years ago? So that should be you're better off today. No, we're worse off because we got everybody's nukes. We got North Korea's got nukes. Iran wants to get nukes. Yeah, we're not talking to any of these countries. So. And also we had this from the TPM Cafe from the Electoral Central area of the Talking Points Memo Cafe. New York's Congressional District 26. New Democrat ad to Reynolds. Isn't it wrong to do nothing? Let's see. Democrat Jack Davis goes up on the air attacking floundering National Republican campaign, Congressional Campaign Committee Chief Tom Reynolds over the Foley Zippergate. Reynolds says he did nothing wrong, but when it comes to protecting kids, isn't it wrong to do nothing? So now they're saying now they go back, they're finding out that this stuff with Foley was known back in 2000 now. So now they're going further back. And what was that one guy that came out, the 22-year-old, said he actually had sex with Foley? So I'll take what the hell's going on. And also from today, from the Florida Senate race poll from Survey USA, the incumbent Senator Nelson is 55%. That battle act, Catherine Harris, is 37%. So she's going to go down in flames. And also, the National Republican Campaign Congressional Campaign Committee dumps over $1.7 million more into the House races. Today, it brought more huge infusions of cash from the national GOP in the House races across the country. The NRCC, for instance, today sank $1.7 million into around two dozen congressional races. The massive blast of cash comes right after an NRCC spokesman told Fox News that 90% of its remaining ad budget would go to negative ads. There they come. Here they come. They're going to be on the attack now. As they know, they're about ready to lose all their power, and the subpoenas and the investigations are going to fly. And also from today, from the Cafferty file on CNN, he said, what should the U.S. do about the sharp rise in casualties in Iraq? One of the answers was, Jack, we need to realize that as a nation, their troops are now policing a civil war. The Iraqis will war between themselves at this point, and to hold American troops in such a situation is disgraceful. They deserve better. It's from Steve in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And also, Jack, another answer. Jack, the best way to reduce casualties in Iraq is to get the hell out of Iraq. They don't want us there. The majority of Americans don't want us there. What's the problem? $8 billion a month would buy a lot of fence posts for our borders. It's from Joe in Florida. And another question he had, would it help the Republicans' chances in the midterm elections if Dennis Hassert resigned as Speaker of the House? And also if he put down the fourth order of ribs and chicken. Republicans have zero chance if Dennis Hassert resigns from office. People are already fed up with the Republican administration. And this scandal is just putting another nail in their coffin. That's from David from Cleveland, Ohio. Absolutely not. The Republicans are toast in the upcoming elections. That's from Dorothy in Placentia, California. Interesting. And also we had this from Monday from Reuters, a poll from the Pennsylvania U.S. Senate race. Bob Casey Jr. is 48% Democrat versus Republican Senator Rick Santorum, that they say in The Sopranos, 36%. So that's a 12-point lead for him. And in the Rhode Island U.S. Senate race poll, from USA Today, Gallup, Senator Lincoln Chafee, 39%. And the Democrat, Sheldon Whitehouse, is 50%. And they talk about on the Fox Beltway Boys, they did the poll. They put the polls up. They switched the party affiliations for the candidates. They had Whitehouse with an R next to his name and Chafee with a D. Like they did that on the O'Reilly Factor last week with the Mark Foley thing. They put a D next to his name, making the viewers think he's a Democrat. So, I mean, I don't know. They say it's just an accident, but twice in 1 week, I don't know. And Ohio U.S. Senate race poll Monday from Rasmussen, Senator Mark DeWine, 43%. Democrat Sherrod Brown, 50%. So Sherrod Brown is up 7%. So, and what else? And then Bush's economy approval from Monday from Ipsos and Associated Press. Approval is 40%. Disapproval, 58%. So even with the gas prices falling, Bush is still disapproved of the way he's handling the economy by 58% of the country. And also from today, 75 more corpses found in Baghdad. This is from the International Herald Tribune. Most bodies were bound, riddled with bullets, and show signs of torture. At least 75 corpses have been found in Baghdad and the Baghdad area since Monday morning, the authorities said Tuesday, with most of the bodies found riddled with bullets. The grim discoveries reflected a familiar pattern of death squad killings and sectarian violence in the Iraqi capital. Isn't this supposed to be the bastion of safety and calm in Iraq? I guess not anymore. An Interior Ministry spokesman said that 60 of the bodies have been found in Baghdad in the 24-hour period that ended Tuesday morning, while 15 more were discovered during the day. In addition, at least 5 bombs exploded in the capital area, killing at least 14 civilians and 6 policemen and wounding 23 people, the ministry and police sources said. Wow. And they also had the food poisoning breakout. Apparently the Iraqi police were... I don't know what the hell they're doing, eating something, and they all got food poisoning. So, it's what's going on over there? It's crazy. Get these troops out of there. And GOP feeling backlash from cut-and-run rhetoric. Tuesday, some Republicans are feeling backlash within their party for attacking Democrats as the party of cut-and-run. Slate political analyst John Dickerson said, until recently, the president has been above the fray, letting others use the harsh rhetoric. Oh, really? I thought they've been using the word Nazi sympathizer for us who disagree with their Iraq war plan. He recently grabbed headlines, however, when he referred to the Democratic Party as the party of cut and run. Oh, yeah, it's the Republican Party is the Repulsivicans and then the Retreatikins. How about that? Dickerson said that the cut and run rhetoric framing has negative effects on international diplomacy. It could backfire, Dickerson said, because of the president's strategy relies on withdrawal. In a negotiation with Iraqi leaders, the president has said his ambassador in Iraq has said, look, if you don't shape up and progress a little faster, we're going to move on. You're going to lose support of the United States. So I guess I understand Bush is threatening to pull the troops out. And there, but wait, he'll look like he's cutting and running when he pulls the troops out. So, I don't know. You'll never get them to say that. No. And also, we had this from the registered voters. Registered voters prefer Democrats in midterms 54% to 41% in a Washington Post ABC News poll. Democrats have regained a commanding position going into the final weeks of the midterm election campaigns, with support eroding for Republicans in Iraq, ethics, and presidential leadership, according to the Washington Post ABC News poll. Approval of Congress has plunged to its lowest level in more than a decade, 32%, and Americans by a margin of 54 to 35 say they trust Democrats more than Republicans to deal with the biggest problems the nation is confronting. By a margin of 54 to 41, registered voters say they plan to vote for the Democrat over the Republicans in the congressional elections next month, and Bush's approval rating is back down to 39%, so... horrible, horrible, horrible. George Giorgio saying, how low can George go? I don't know. I think he's about at his lowest he can go now. So unless something else happens and drops him even lower. But you know, he said there's like a bedrock of like 35 to 38% are the staunch supporters of his no matter what. So he might be just about at it. And I saw this, that Jeb Bush was forced to hide in the closet to avoid demonstrators. Uh-oh, I hope he's not in there with Mark Foley. Did Mark Foley come out of the closet? I don't know. And protesters greeted Florida Governor Jeb Bush on his way to a campaign event. The president's brother encountered protesters on their way to join a demonstration outside the exclusive Duquesne Club, where Rick Sanatorium, a Republican, was holding a fundraiser on Friday. He briefly took refuge in a subway station supply closet. What the hell? To avoid the anti-Republican demonstrators. The protesters, made up of members of the United Steelworkers Union and the anti-war group Uprise Counter Recruitment, chanted Jeb Go Home and said Bush blew them a kiss. What's he doing? Bush, accompanied by a security guard and an aide, retreated into a nearby subway station and was followed by about 50 picketers. Blah blah blah. So actually, he was ushered into a station supply closet and stayed in there until the crowd left. So they had to shove him into a broom closet until the protesters were gone. It's amazing. You think the governor of a state of Florida would have enough security detail that he wouldn't have to be ushered into a closet? You know. Anyway, and Monday from reality-based educator blog from a Newsweek poll. Bush is at 33%. GOP in meltdown. The Foley scandal by itself is not going to do the Republicans in. but it sure does underscore to voters all those things that they do not like about one-party rule. No accountability, a party that lies and covers up its mistakes, and a party that exists for its own preservation and nothing else. Wow, that's pretty strong. That is pretty strong. And also Monday from the Daily Coast, Hester Unhinged. Oh, yeah, he's unhinged every time he sits down at the dinner table. What are you talking about? There's been talk of what might be good or bad for the Republican Party. And he says, but let's be honest here. Dennis Hastert is in this fight for exactly one man, Dennis Hastert. What the Republican Party wants or doesn't want does not enter into it. What the Democrats could or couldn't make hay with doesn't enter into it. Hastert has been receiving far more criticism from conservatives than from Democrats. But this isn't about any lofty conservative principles or constituents or any of the rest of the drivel. This is all about power. So that's true. That's all he's sitting there for. He doesn't want to give up that speakership because he doesn't want to give up that power. He wants to be like Newt Gingrich. When he stepped down from speaker, he couldn't stand being some lowly congressman. He had to end up quitting then. So, and radical rights Dobson, this loudmouth, calls Foley's lurid messages a joke. Yeah, Dobson's a joke too, isn't he? From Media Matters on Monday, echoing Drudge and Savage, Dobson and Hettinger claimed Foley scandal is a sort of a joke and a prank by Pages. James Dobson and Daniel Hettinger both echoed a claim previously made by Matt Drudge, Matt Drudge, and Michael Savage, that sexually explicit communications that Representative Mark Foley allegedly engaged in with former congressional Pages were sort of a joke or a prank on the part of the former Pages. They out of their minds. You know, this Dobson, he's like a thumper, a Bible thumper, like damn Falwell is. You know, I mean, these poor kids don't want to go through this. They're doing this. You know, the first one, you know, gave it to ABC. Now they're all starting to come forward with all this stuff. They're not going to go through this media meat grinder like they're going to. They're trying to set it straight for future kids to go through this Page system. You know, to set this program straight so it's safe for these kids and away from these Republicans and the Democrats from preying on these poor kids. So, and from Time Magazine, will Foley end the Republican Revolution? Every revolution begins with the power of an idea and ends with clinging to power is the only idea left. The epitaph for the movement that started when Newt Gingrich and his forces rose from the backbench of the House chamber in 1984 may well have been written last week in the same medium that incubated it, talk radio. On conservative commentator Laura Ingraham's show, the longest-serving House leader and Republican House leader in history, explained why he would not resign despite a sex scandal that has produced a hail of questions about his leadership and the failure to stop one of his members from cyber-stalking teenage congressional Pages. He said, Hastert, if I fill up my tent and leave, then where does it leave us? If the Democrats sweep, then we have no ability to fight back and get our message out. So, and I think with that, we'll take our music interlude, and I'll get Alan Stewart Carl on the phone, and we'll bring it back for the discussion of what's going on in politics, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Thank you very much.
It's time for us to admit that we have a problem.
That's true, Mr. President. You know, denial is not just a river in Egypt.
No. You're thinking of the Amazon.
Just do what you have to do, sir.
Demand is up, supplies are down. What I want is light, crude and brown. I crave oil to get my kicks. Attacked Iraq to get my fix. I love oil, oh, every ounce. Nuclear, I can't pronounce. When my twins go out for fun, I say don't drive, take Air Force One. Oh, we can't conserve it, we are just way too spoiled. Oh yeah. Globe is heating up, you know it's starting to boil. Gonna have to face it, we're addicted to oil. I saw the signs, but I don't care. Ozone holes, polluted air, a hybrid car might save the day. Each time I look, I say no way, those cars look gay. I can't be saved, cause fossil fuels are what I crave. Without gas,
to start my heart. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
We like to think that we're immune to the stuff.
Oh yeah.
Many shortages, you know it, is just a bluff.
But gonna has to face it, U.S. can't get enough. Might as well face it, we're addicted to oil. Never can replace it, we're addicted to oil.
Might as well face it, we're addicted to oil.
Might as well face it, we're addicted to oil.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Al-Shib, or whatever the guy's name was.
And we are back. Subject to discussion once again live on LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. Want to thank the Capital Steps for that wonderful music interlude. And now we'll be joined by Alan Stewart Carl. Sir, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, thank you very much for being back.
Thank you.
Welcome. We had you on, it's a long time ago, when you were starting the other blog, the Yellow Dog.
Right? Yeah, that Yellow was Line. About Yellow a year Line. And a half ago, maybe.
Yeah, so how have you been?
Been doing well, thank you.
Now, give everybody, listeners, we got a lot of new listeners because we're now affiliated with MediaBoulevard.com, so we get a lot of new listeners listening every week now. Give them a little idea what your blog's about. Now you're at maverickviews.blogspot.com, correct?
That's correct. And it's a blog that exists somewhere in the political center. I don't profess to be either right-wing or left-wing, although I certainly have opinions that could be targeted as right or left. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a place for me and for others to gather and talk about the issues of the day without having to spin everything.
True. Like I said, I tend to be left, but I mean, some other things I pull to the center, or even to the right. It's like this. Today at work, I was arguing with somebody about that Plan B business with the birth control. Now it's going to be over the counter. I said, no, I disagree with that. I think you should be able to have to go to the doctor for that Plan B stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the issues that people can track one way or the other on.
Yeah. So, and what's the big news today on your blog right now? Is it the North Korea nuke mess?
Yeah, of course. That's been one of the things that I've been talking about. I've also been talking about the Texas gubernatorial race since I'm from Texas.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's really interesting. Kinky Friedman, right? And then Perry's the incumbent, and Kinky Friedman, and then the granny, what's her name? Strayhorn, right?
Yes.
And she's running. And she's the mother of Scott McClellan, right?
That's correct. She is.
Yeah, and now they say Freeman. Now he was doing well in the polling, but he made some remarks that they've been trashing him over, right?
Yeah, Kinky made some less than sensitive remarks racially, particularly speaking about the hurricane evacuees that are in Houston. I believe he called them crackheads and some other kind of slur, and people took offense to that. Hmm. It's a very interesting race, really, because it's a four-way race right now. Because there is, as you mentioned, Rick Perry, who's our governor and who's the incumbent, Carol Keaton Strayhorn, who was a Republican and is now an independent and running as an independent, Kinky running as an independent, and of course we have a Democrat, Chris Bell, who's also running. So it's a very interesting race to follow.
Yeah, now the last polling, who's in front right now? Is it still Perry? Or
Perry is in front in most polls. The polls kind of tend to be all over the place after that. Everyone, I think, pretty much has Perry pinned in front, but he's just barely over 30%. So. Hmm. It really is going to come down the wire, I think.
Yeah. Now, do you really think Friedman can win, or I don't know? Strayhorn reminds me of Ann Richards, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's intentional. Yeah, I think she definitely puts on the strong Texas woman when she stands up there and speaks. I personally haven't even decided who I'm going to vote for, and that's very rare. I'm usually one of these people who trashes undecideds, but in this case, I really don't know. I know I'm not going to vote for Rick Perry, but after that, haven't made up my mind.
Now, also down there in Texas, you got the congressional race that for DeLay's old seat. Now, how's that going?
Word is that the Democrat will likely take that seat, although that is an extremely Republican district. Hmm. But that's because the courts made DeLay keep his name on the ballot. So to vote for the person who's actually running, you have to write their name in, and as history shows, write-in candidates have a very hard time winning anything.
Huh. That'd be the ultimate slap in the face of the DeLay of the Democrats take his seat, huh?
Yes, although I imagine that Democrat will probably only hold the seat for one term.
Yeah.
Because the district is so Republican.
Yeah, because the districts were pretty much gerrymandered by DeLay, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even if it wasn't gerrymandered, that's it's kind of a south area of Houston there. Mm. That's going to be a very Republican area, no matter what you do with it.
Yeah. Now, what's your view about the North Korea? Chat room's asking the your view of the North Korea disaster. You know, the now has it been shown anywhere that they actually did test a nuclear bomb? Now, I saw reports somewhere on the internet that may not have been nuclear, may have just been a, you know, they must have, may have just set something off just to fool everybody.
It seems right now that no one is quite sure exactly what happened, whether they tried to set off a nuclear bomb and it was a bit of a dud, or if they faked it with just a bunch of explosives.
Mm.
I think they're still waiting for them to vent the explosion, and the radiation will show, give some idea of how successful their test was.
Yeah, and the big thing now that they're saying that, you know, should the Bush administration, because I guess North Korea wants to talk directly with the United States, and then Bush doesn't want anything to do with that, right?
Bush has rejected having any kind of one-on-one talks with North Korea. And the reason he does that, from my understanding, is that he doesn't want to give the regime any more legitimacy than they already have. Now, that is certainly, when it comes to foreign politics, and when it particularly comes to North Korea, there's oftentimes, in my view, no right answer on how to handle the situation. Particularly with North Korea, I think there's probably a bunch of bad choices.
Yeah, they it's well, I don't know if you they had Jim Baker was on Hannity and Combs last week, and he said, you know, they asked him about his trips. He said he made like 30 some trips to Syria, but when Bush 41 was in, even though, you know, Syria was a, you know, arch enemy of the United States, he just did that to keep a diplomatic channel open to them. You think we should do the same thing with North Korea, at least have some kind of diplomatic channel open to them, huh?
Well, we have engaged in multi-way talks with them involving several other nations, and those have seemed to be less than productive. If someone could convince me that one-on-one talks would be productive, then I would go ahead and support it.
Mm.
But as far as I know, speaking to them one-on-one isn't really going to change the situation. I'm not sure there's anything we could do to change the situation. I don't think there's a military solution out there. Not only is our military already tied up elsewhere, but North Korea's got a million-man army. That's not a country that would be easy to tangle with if we chose to.
Yeah, well, and they also said on CNN last night, they said that if we did starve some of North Korea, that you know, in the first wave, I figured, like they said, 50,000 people would be killed in Seoul with a snap of a finger, right, because there's infiltrators in South Korea already from the North just waiting for orders, right?
Yes, and I'm pretty sure that no one wants war with North Korea. China certainly does, and South Korea certainly doesn't. I think a lot of people would like us to contain North Korea, and it would be nice if we could do what we've done with some of the other communist countries, which is kind of slowly bring them out, or in the case of Eastern Europe, they snapped and came out of communism. But North Korea is such a particular kind of communism. It's so incredibly authoritarian that it's really hard to get in there and do anything about the situation.
Yeah, and then I think in Hardball they're talking about some kind of a proposed, maybe the United States will have a naval blockade around North Korea to hurt them economically. So I don't know.
Right, there's already a lot of sanctions we have against them, and they've already shown that they have no problem letting their people starve.
Yeah, because you wonder if that would do any good, because like I said, then the people will suffer more than Kim Jong-il, you know?
That is quite likely, although obviously something needs to be done. We can't just ignore them.
But if you have the answer, you'll be on Nightline tonight.
I wish I did have the answer. Right now, I'm not sure anyone has the answer. I haven't heard a single argument that I would say, yeah, that's absolutely the way we need to go.
Yeah, it's a disaster. And then now on your blog, is that getting a lot of traction? You usually find these when I had people on foreign policy before, you used to get reaction, oh my God, it was the most boring hour you ever did. You know, people get lost in this big foreign policy mess because you can't wrap your arms around it. You know?
Yeah, you know, the other blogs that I've been reading, there haven't been a lot of commentaries from readers on it, and I think that's because it is such a complex situation that you can come off sounding pretty stupid and naive if you make a blanket statement about what we should do.
Yeah.
It's really one of those things that if you haven't studied the situation extensively, then it's going to be very hard for you to make a reasonable comment about it.
Yeah, and then you get a story like Hastert and the Foley Gate, and then everybody could jump onto that with the opinion, right?
That one's extremely easy to comment on. That whole situation has been a blogger's dream. I mean, the number of blog posts about it just all over the spectrum. It's been amazing.
Well, and then more and more of these pages are coming out every day. It's like one or two, more and more and more. And then you had the one over the weekend. you know, the 22-year-old or whatever, however old he was, said he had to actually had sex with Foley. It's like, I'm like, will this ever end? It's like every, it's like, you know,
Clearly, Mark Foley has some mental issues that he needs to work out, and it's unfortunate that these pages got caught up in his issues, and it's even more unfortunate that it went on for as long as it did.
Yeah, it's yeah, because nowadays somebody as far back as 2000, Colby knew about it, and then also there's, you know, in the Republican leadership of the Congress, some of them knew about it, and then it's like, you know, good grief. I mean, if something would have happened to one of these kids, God forbid they got raped or killed or something like that, I mean, you know, how could they live with that, you know?
No, it's one of the situations where it seems like a lot of people knew this guy was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's questionable how many people knew that he was actually predatory.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the million-dollar question right here is, did anyone know that he was actually seeking out the, you know, attention and affections of these boys?
Yeah, I mean, I did go to abcnews.com and I read some of the IMs and all that. It is creepy, but you know, it
kind of makes you a little ill, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I read them too. Unfortunately, I probably shouldn't, but.
But you know what?
Curiosity got the best of me.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, he's asking stuff. But you know what? The pages are answering his questions. So I mean, I could see if he's, you know, I like to slip them off of you, whatever he said, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. You know, and they could say, please don't say that. I'm not into that. And they kept going. So I mean, I thought, well, I mean, as much as, you know, it is his fault because he's the congressman, he's older. But these kids didn't really, you know, they didn't say no. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. And you know, my guess is that many of the pages he talked with or had relationships with are probably homosexual,
yeah,
in some way. But, you know, I think the one thing we have to remember is that 16-year-old boys are just 16-year-old boys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't have, you know, a full understanding of the world yet.
Oh, true.
That's why we have laws to protect them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been several situations recently of female teachers having sex with, you know, 15, 14-year-old boys, and they end up in jail for it.
Well, not if you're a blonde and have a body of a model, you don't.
Yeah, the one in Florida, I believe she got off on some kind of insanity defense.
She got off all right. You did a double entendre there.
Yeah, right.
But she, yeah, it's like I said, where were these teachers when I was in school? I never had these shapely blondes. I always had the fat ass teacher with the ruler cracking my knuckles.
Right, and you see, and that's the reaction that a lot of guys have to those kind of things.
Yeah,
because we remember being 16-year-old boys, mm-hmm, and you know, you're 16 and your hormones are raging.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you know some of these boys that Foley had talks with may have had some interest.
Yeah,
because they were probably discovering their own sexuality and exploring it, but that in no way makes it acceptable what he did, because it's still a predatory action.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I hope when he gets out of that alcohol rehab, wherever the hell he's hiding in there, like Gibson, Melkin, they all
go to rehab, right?
And it's all alcohol. Now he did it because of the alcohol. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I heard the jokes flying around. You know, Letterman said, no, he's not. His problem's not with Jack Daniels. It's with Jack and Daniel. You know what I mean? it's true. I mean, it's crazy. Why is he going? You can go on and on about that. It's just crazy. And now I'm also on the blog, which is maverickviews.blogspot.com, about the Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. Now, Bush is going to sign that into effect, right?
That is my understanding. It's attached to the port security bill,
mm-hmm, which is
so smart. It's not out there by itself. It's actually kind of attached to, you know, a very important bill. So it looks like it's going to become law.
Wow! So when he signs that, it'll put an end to all these online gambling sites, then, huh?
Well, it's questionable how many of them will stop. Some of the bigger ones have announced they would. PartyPoker.com being one of them have announced that they will stop allowing Americans, but the law, as it is written, still doesn't make it illegal for any individual to, say, play poker online. It makes it illegal to transfer banks to transfer money or take money from these gambling sites, and all these gambling sites are based offshore.
Yeah, so I don't know, because as much as I live in Las Vegas, you know, I agree they should outlaw this online gambling, because you know what? If you're going to gamble, here I am. I'm going to the right now, so watch out, Alan. I'm going to the right. But now, if you're going to gamble, for crying out loud, you have to make an effort. You can't sit in there in your underwear, you know, playing poker, you know, gambling all your money away. You should be able to make an effort. You should be able to drive an hour or two to get to the casino or something like that. I just don't think sitting in your house, pulling out the credit card, and going crazy on it.
I agree with you on all counts until we get to poker. I think online poker is a different beast than, say, online roulette.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because poker is a game of skill as well as a game of chance. But
yeah.
I know a lot of people who make a living playing online poker. So this bill will hurt their livelihood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they can stop taking a credit card, but you can send them maybe open up accounts for the players online. You know, send them money and they'll put it in an account. You could draw money off an account or something like that. Maybe that might be a way around it somehow.
One of the problems with this bill is as long as there is a online poker room willing to take Americans' money, Americans will be able to play poker online.
Hmm.
And there always will be some place out there for them to play.
Yeah.
You're just not going to be able to stop it. I think, you know, a wiser move would be possibly to legalize it and regulate it and tax it.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be more beneficial for the nation. But I have a feeling that if you actually, I don't know how many Americans play poker online, but I imagine it's a small percentage. So I don't think it's really going to affect too many people.
No, and also on your blog, actually, I saw this a couple weeks ago when I had Joey on from Centrist Dems, you wrote that there's no vital center in politics right now. Is that
there
right?
Is no organized center.
Oh, okay, okay.
That, it doesn't mean that people who are in the center aren't vital to the system. What that whole post was about was that there's been a lot of efforts to organize centrists in the last few years, and I've been involved in some of those efforts. And they often amount to very little because, let's say you and I, we probably are both somewhere near the center, but if we sat here and talked, we would never be able to come up with a platform.
Yeah, true.
Because a lot of people who live in the center by their nature are independent and aren't partisan and like to have their own views. And it's very hard to organize those people into any kind of political force. They are a force in their numbers, but they cannot be an organized force.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's like that Unity 08 business. Now, what's happened to that now? That's kind of floundered. You haven't really heard much about them anymore because they made that
They're still around.
Yeah.
I'm on their mailing list, and I get mailings from them from time to time. I'm not sure what their membership is because I'm not a board member or anything with them. They started off with a petition drive trying to get 10,000 people in, like, 1 week to sign a petition basically asking Congress to stop being so partisan. And I do not believe they reached that 10,000 number, although they came close. They got a lot of people to sign it. But again, it's one of these situations that everyone says, oh, that'd be great, I'd love to have a third party. And the minute someone starts laying out, you know, the foundation for a third party, people say, well, I don't agree with that part. I don't want to be a part of you.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. It's like the Reform Party. You know, I think we had you on before. So I was, pretty well involved with that here. And the same thing. You know, if he kept it to a couple items, everybody's tend to agree on the deficit and the debt and a few things. But soon he started wandering off into the other issues. Oh, nope. Pro-choice, forget it. I'm not going with you then. You know, right?
Right. And it doesn't take much for people to decide to jump ship. In my experience, you know, I've been involved with the Centrist Coalition, and that is. A lot of very good people have worked on that organization, have run that organization, but it has been incredibly difficult to get any kind of membership base because it's the exact same thing. People can agree with certain points. We need to have more debate in this country and less bickering. You know, we need to take issues more seriously. But once you get to specific policy points of any kind, a lot of people are going to say, well, I don't agree with that. I don't want to be a member anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the John in the chat room, he said they were supposed to send me a bumper sticker, Unity 08.
Was it Unity 08 was supposed to?
Yeah, I got one. I have a Unity 08, but I didn't put it on my car, but I have the bumper sticker.
I mean, that began with a lot of fanfare because it's got some, real players behind it. Hamilton Jordan, who, of course, was Jimmy Carter's chief of staff and ran Ross Perot's campaign, and Angus King, who was a former independent governor of Maine. Both of them are involved, so they were able to get a lot of publicity when it started off, and I believe there was a lot of interest. But one of their things is their whole idea is to run a independent ticket in 2008 if neither of the major parties nominate what they would consider a centrist. So right now they're just trying to kind of keep going and build a base and have enough people to be able to put together this independent ticket should the need arise.
Well, we'll see. But then, actually, the John in the chat room is asking, does the Centrist Coalition still exist? Yeah, it still exists, right?
The Centrist Coalition still exists. Mm-hmm. There is still a blog associated with it, Centerfield.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't really doing anything, or I should say we aren't really doing anything, because technically I'm a board member there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, for one, the board is made up of average people like myself who have real jobs and families and are not politicians and do not have robust connections. So the entire group has to be a grassroots movement. The grass hasn't been growing very well, so we haven't been able to do much.
Mm. Yeah, it's a shame, because, you know, a few months ago I had on the American Centrist Party. You know, I had the chairman on, Matt Unger. Same thing, you know, you got a few members, and it's kind of, you know, it gets strong in their fund and kind of peters out.
But it takes an extreme amount of energy to run and build one of these organizations. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times you see these grassroots movements, particularly on the far right and the far left, spring up because those people have extreme passion for one or two particular issues. And once you get the people in the center, it's not that people in the center don't have extreme passion, it's that those passions tend to be more diverse. So it's harder to focus in on one or two issues, and you have people lose interest.
Yeah, that's true. Now, looking at the congressional race, midterm, how do you think everything's going to shake out there?
Well, that's really interesting. You know, it's amazing to me that the Democrats won't win it in a landslide, because the way the politics are these days, and with how much negativity there is towards Bush and towards the Republican Congress, by all rights, the Democrats should just sweep in. But because there's been so much gerrymandering over the years, there's not that many races that are competitive. The Democrats need to pick up 15 seats, I believe, in the House in order to take it. And the estimates I see is there's only probably about 30 to 40 races that are competitive. That's ridiculous if you think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, it's all this incumbency. You know, the trappings of power and everything. It's disgusting. It's like I went through the USA Today at the snapshots. You know, all these, you know, senators have been in there for 38 years. It's like, holy cow, these people got to get out of there.
Incumbency
you know?
Is very powerful. Oh. And senators, at least one statewide, but representatives, their districts, the mm-hmm. individual states. That basically, the Republicans and Democrats have gotten together in a lot of states and have drawn up safe districts that they believe they can never, ever lose.
Huh.
And that has caused a situation where, in most recent elections, over 95% of our House of Representatives have been reelected.
Hmm.
That's really crazy.
Yeah,
it
is.
About it.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, the whole reason they were only elected to two-year terms was so that we could turn them over quickly. But now you're getting a situation where once you are in, you're in until you quit or, you know, get caught in a scandal.
Yeah, because, you know, like Senator Byrd, he's been in for, what is it now, since 47 years
yeah,
he's
Senator,
been there.
Senator Byrd, I think, has been a senator before my parents were born.
Wow. So. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy's been since 62. It's, you know, was it 44 years he's been in? It's horrible. I mean,
right.
Anaway's the same thing, 63. And Ted Stevens, he's the one at the Bridge to Nowhere. 38 years he's been up in there in Alaska.
Yeah, and the thing about those senators are, because they are statewide elected, it's hard to blame that on gerrymandering. It's just power of incumbency in those cases.
Yeah, it's horrible. You know, got to start cranking these people out of there, you know? Do you believe in term limits or no?
I don't believe in term limits because I think it's the right of the voters to keep or reject their people. Plus, term limits tend to be too short.
Mm-hmm.
Here in San Antonio, we have very short term limits on our city council and for our mayor, and the result has been that we don't have a lot of people who know what they're doing. You need some people that have been around for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But they should be around for 30 years not because the system is rigged mm-hmm. to keep them there, but because the voters actually want to keep them there.
Yeah.
And right now we have a situation where a lot of people are there because the system's rigged.
Mm. Yeah, I guess your question from the chat room about with the incumbency, campaign finance, how do you think that should be fixed to help the incumbents?
Campaign finance is an interesting issue. It seems to me that money is kind of like a rat. It can kind of squeeze into any place. And no matter how many walls you put up, that money seems to find its way in. And one of the unanticipated side effects of some of these campaign finance laws is that the incumbents have the power of incumbency, and they can raise a lot of money. But the challengers, since they can only take very limited donations from each individual, have a much harder time raising money. Before there were such laws, they could raise an unlimited or a much higher level of money from two or three wealthy people who wanted to back them, and they could actually run a more competitive campaign. Mm. Now, does that mean we need to do away with our finance laws or find a new way to arrange them? And I really don't know. It's a very complicated issue. I am, I guess, in philosophy for, philosophically, I'm for campaign finance laws, but I'm not sure if the ones we have on the books are doing us a lot of good right now.
Yeah, well, it's like those ones that McCain and them, you know, rammed through, and then all of a sudden these 527s all popped up, and everybody, you know, they're all, you know, throwing money at those.
Money will find its way in. You cannot close enough loopholes.
Yeah, and then, you know, all this SWIFT voting, and, you know now it's coming back around now.
Well, then you see the way it gets in through people like Jack Abramoff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of ways for money to kind of creep its way into politicians' pockets, into their, you know, campaign coffers.
Mm. Yeah, well, the Abramoff thing. Now, I'm surprised. That was supposed to be the huge scandal of the year. It's going to throw all the Republicans out. And that's kind of you know, I don't know, maybe it's gotten lost in the shuffle of everything else that's going on with the Iraq and, the Foley Gate and all that stuff.
I think people have a very short-term memory when it comes to that kind of corruption because it seems to be a victimless crime.
Yeah, it's taking money.
No one got hurt. I mean, this whole Mark Foley thing has gotten a lot more attention because, you know, there are identifiable victims involved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that is just one more symptom of the corruption that's in Congress, in particular in the Republican Party right now.
Yeah, well, and then the cable news networks, I keep harping on that. I think I was harping on that when I had you both on when you guys were doing the other blog. We got these 24-hour news stations, yet they can't seem to follow more than one story at a time. You know, they can't, you know, they can follow, you know, why can't they follow the Foley Gate and the Iraq? Now, Iraq went off the TV for about 2 weeks then. You know, they stopped talking about Iraq completely. And then the Abramoff business, and then, you know, it's just like, God, you got 24 hours. Can't you devote, you know, break up your program so not every show is talking about the same thing? You know what I'm saying?
You would think they would.
Yeah.
But they have very much tunnel vision, and they feel as if they're in constant competition for viewership. And so they tend to all put on the same thing and try to give it, you know, their own spins or their own experts. But I think a lot of the problems with the cable news networks is that they mistake entertainment or really even tabloidism for news.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a piece on CNN.com on their front page up at the top, not the main story, which is about North Korea, but right on the side there, about the runaway bride. That happened, I don't know, quite a while back, mm-hmm. and I didn't care about it when it happened the first time, and I sure as heck don't care about it now. It was mm-hmm. about her giving her presents back. I mean, that's not news.
No.
That's not even local news.
No.
That barely makes the National Enquirer, and yet they feel some need to cover it as if the viewers care.
Well, I mean, it's just this garbage. I guess it doesn't take much effort to cover a story like that. They just throw this thing out there. It's like I don't watch Greta Van Susteren because all she does is, you know, pound on these stories about these poor victims and all that. Same thing with the other one, Nancy Grace. It's like, oh my, and these shows are so popular. It's amazing.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're not. They actually don't get like ratings anywhere close to the shows that, you know, show on network television. But they do get high ratings for cable news. I mean, Nancy Grace is a star.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally find her to be one of the less talented journalists they have.
Yeah.
Simply because she doesn't seem to care much about facts as much as she cares about exposé and, you know, giving her own opinion and spinning things. And I don't know.
Yeah.
She's a personality, and she cares more about her advancing her own personality.
Exactly. And, well, Alan, before I let you go, any final words?
Well,
check out
I
your
think
blog.
This is going to be an extraordinarily interesting election.
Mm.
I'm personally, I think, rooting for the Democrats, although I am not a Democrat, and I may vote for a couple of Republicans. But I think the Republicans have pretty much run out of gas in the Congress, and the Democrats deserve some chance to show us something, and two, if they can't do it, two more years, we get a chance to throw them out. So
exactly. Just at least one house of Congress. That way you have a check. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, we have a Republican president, so,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's such a bad thing to have a Congress of one party and a president of another.
Exactly.
I think that if, you know, it probably leads to more gridlock than compromise, but right now gridlock is probably preferable to a lot of other things they could be doing.
Exactly. Well, Alan, thank you very much for being on. We'll have you on in a few weeks.
Great, sounds good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you. And bye-bye. Thank you. And that was Alan Stewart Carl of the Maverick Views.blogspot.com. We thank you very much for being on the program. And we'll take a break for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. When we'll be coming back with the Dr. Net Ranger, the Mad Rocket Scientist. We'll talk about the all things pop culture with Media Boulevard. And then ending the second hour will be Koenig Rules, the Mad Professor, with a discussion of Galactica and Doctor Who. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Attention, attention. See that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. Once again, live at LVRocks.com as well as on S2DRadio.com. We should be joined in just a moment by Dr. Net Ranger, the mad rocket scientist of Subject to Discussion. You say he's getting a busy signal. There he is. And then in the end of the second hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Koenig Rules, Professor Koenig Rules, with a review of the Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who Friday night programs. And before we bring on the Net Ranger, and in brief, we have the Nashville Star has snagged a gem. Jewel will co-host the upcoming edition of the Country Music Talent Search with Cowboy Troy. Nashville Star kicks off its fifth season on the USA Network on January 11th. And David Spade, the Saturday Night Live alum, has joined the cast of the mid-season CBS sitcom called Rules of Engagement, and it's produced by M. Sandler's company, and his Comedy Central series, The Showbiz Show, has been renewed for a third season, set to debut in February. And also Project Runway's Final Four and a surprising twist. None of the remaining designers were eliminated from Bravo's Project Runway on the September 27th episode. All four, Michael, Jeffrey, Laura, and Uli, will participate in the finale airing October 11th and the 18th. And Charlie Sheen is going to get $350,000 per episode for 2.5 men. And so that's interesting. So I think now we're joined by Dr. Net Ranger. And Dr. Net Ranger, are you there, sir?
Yes, son. How's it going?
Hi. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks a lot.
No problem. And this is the he's from MediaBoulevard.com as well as Media Boulevard Magazine. And we urge everybody to go to the message board at either S2D Radio or Media Boulevard Magazine to give your 2 cents about the program. And now, pop culture-wise, we have a little bit of Galactica stuff, but we really want to get too much because we'll steal Koenig's thunder, right?
Right. I definitely won't go into any of that because I'm looking forward to hearing what Koenig has to say as well. But now, one of the things that I'm not sure if you'll mention, it kind of appeared last week. It was kind of all over the internet about there was an Israeli newspaper last week that ran an article about Battlestar Galactica.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
No, so they talk about Galactica?
Yeah. Since again, it's a fan over there. I guess I don't know if he downloads or if he has satellite or what. But, had some really interesting quotes and. Kind of taking a look at it, I mean, now we've got the guys that have been the good guys all the way through are now the bad guys, the suicide bombers. Colonel Tai and the president are essentially Al-Qaeda.
Huh.
And, anyway, it's just a real interesting take on that. Had a couple quotes from it that, maybe I'll just read one of these that's straight from that article, and you can actually read it on the message board on Media Boulevard or on the BSG TNS website.
But, okay.
He says, what if our standard soothing Western logic about the sanctity of life is irrelevant to our enemies, such that they would be willing to launch a nuclear attack to annihilate anyone with whom they disagreed because they believed it was part of God's plan? Is surrender or cooperation even possible with such a jihadi mentality?
Mm.
And then he goes on to say, I would posit that as unseemly as it sounds, perhaps watching Battlestar Galactica ought to be required viewing for the leaders of the free world and our own decidedly non-alternative universe.
Mm.
So it's kind of an interesting take. I know there actually seems to be a little bit of pushback this week about some of the things that are happening with the show this year with the Colonials doing the suicide bombings and.
Yeah, I sent that to you in an email. I like the series, everything, but it just felt weird this Friday. I don't know. How about you? I mean, I didn't feel like the last 2 years. It was a little different feel to the show this year. You know?
Yeah, it did seem really different and a lot darker, which is what they've been saying all the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all summer they've been saying it was going to be a really dark show when it comes back. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought they did a really good job with it,
mm-hmm.
Particularly some of the scenes with like the Sharon Cylon character.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
You know, coming over and basically pledging her allegiance to Adama and to the fleet. Some of those scenes were good, but... I think I'll be a little bit happier when they get off the planet and they're kind of back in space and kind of back to what it meant to be.
Yeah, maybe.
But I guess the numbers were 2.2 million, they say.
Yeah, a little. I don't know. We'll talk a bit more to Koenig, but I would imagine Sci-Fi is not too happy with those numbers because the way they're hyping the series, yeah, I think they're expecting more. You know.
Yeah, that seems a little low for me, and it's hard to find the numbers for the cable channels, like we've talked about a few times. Those numbers that I had came from Zap2 today.
Yeah, I was looking too, and then Sci-Fi issued a press release about those numbers as well. And but anyway, we'll save some of that Galactic stuff for Koenig.
Right.
And then you said you had the TV Dead and the Dying. Smith is already gone, right?
Right. That was actually kind of I was a little bit surprised by that. That's the first actual full-up casualty of the season. That one is gone and dead. They aren't even really talking about showing episodes later in the year, and there's no hiatus or anything like that mentioned with it. So it's actually the first real casualty.
Yeah, that was Ray Liotta's show, so they pulled that off. And then Kidnap, they bounced that over to Saturday nights now, right?
Right. Well, they actually made the decision there. They told it to stop production after the 13 episodes.
Mm.
And that's kind of I guess it's a problem the networks have. I mean, they do get some fans who come in to watch a particular show, just who buy into the hype and the commercialization all summer and leading up to September. And those fans come in. So if you have a show like Kidnapped, it's a dramatic series that goes from week to week. And there's an overall mystery. There's a kidnapping, and how are they going to resolve it? They have to be real careful about just cutting that off, like right in the middle.
Mm.
That'll piss people off so they won't come back. So what they did is they actually made a deal basically with the production unit that they would they're to stop production, and the show is not going to go beyond 13 episodes, but they're moving it over to what's basically a graveyard slot on Saturday night. So they get to air the rest of the series over there.
Yeah, Saturday's like the throwaway nights where they rerun a lot of the shows and everything.
Yeah, they do news specials like Dateline. If something big happens in the week, they'll normally do a Dateline special that night. Otherwise, they just do reruns. And they actually change the Saturday time slot. They're pretty free with that. They'll kind of change it midweek a lot of times.
And then Vanished is being moved to Friday nights, right?
You're going to be upset about this, but it's getting put into the Nanny 911 slot.
Uh-oh.
So I know you watch that show.
Damn it. It's replacing Nanny 911.
What night's that now?
It's Friday
night now.
No, what time?
Friday. In the Nanny time slot.
I don't know what time that is.
Yeah, I believe it's 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. It's taking Nanny 911 off the air. Damn it.
Well, I can't tape two shows at once.
Oh, yeah. You're Galactica? No, Doctor Who.
Well, you know what? I can tape Doctor Who because they show that later.
Yeah, you tape Doctor Who after.
So, okay, that works for me.
Because
I saw commercials just as moving to Monday at 9. And I'm like, well, what are they going to do with Vanished? I didn't hear anything about Vanished until you mentioned it.
Yeah, moved to Friday. And then Runaways moving to Sunday night with Seventh Heaven, right?
Right. Now, that just continues to be an interesting story, what's going on with the CW. And
They're floundering.
They're just not making the numbers. And actually, one thing I noticed this week, there's probably a good 7 or 8 news sources that we go look at that have the direct Nielsen feeds. And Media Boulevard gets the Nielsen feeds a little bit later, just with the package we have. But most of the sites that actually digest those on a daily basis dropped the CW this week.
Wow.
So they're only doing the other 4 networks. So the CW certainly is kind of down in the category of the TNTs and the USAs and the other cable networks. So
interesting. And then
Runaway didn't even make $2 million again this week. So doing an experiment switching the comedies that are normally on Sunday nights with they're moving over Seventh Heaven and Runaway to Sunday nights.
Seventh Heaven, they should have left it canceled because it's bombing, right?
Yeah.
And then Justice, that's going to be paired with Prison Break after the World Series, right?
Right, so they haven't given up on Justice.
No.
That was kind of what people were saying a few weeks ago, but then they kind of came back out, and they're saying they're going to give it another good push and a good try and try and pair it up with Prison Break, which is their strongest show right now.
Yeah, and on,
does that mean they're giving up on Vanished then, since they're moving it to Friday? Because no one watches TV on Friday.
Yeah, I think Vanished is getting vanquished to Friday.
Yeah, Vanished
Justice.
Is Friday.
Goes with the Prison Break. And then Friday Night Lights, that was one of your favorite shows. And then that then is opened lower than they expected, NBC.
Yeah,
huh?
So far is the lowest opening of any of the dramatic series of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I think the football thing is shooing people away, especially women and all that. Oh, they want to see some show about football, you know what I mean? And it, I think, you know, they may, yeah, they got to make more, I don't know that how they can do that, make more emphasis that it's a drama, like One Tree Hill or something like that. But they
yeah, they also made a mistake, too, I think. They were promoting it as a football show, but they also, the first night of the show, it premieres against the playoffs, the baseball playoffs, the first night of the baseball playoffs. So,
Well,
you know, sports fans, that they would catch from that, go and watch it. But actually, the show re-aired on Wednesday, and on Tuesday night, it had 7.2 million viewers, and on Wednesday, it had 4.5.
Oh,
so
well,
that's kind of what Jericho did. So it'll be interesting to see if they have any new people there or if the numbers go up tomorrow. But if they go up at all tomorrow, the show's probably safe for a while. If they if they go down, then it's kind of a wait and see. But they've already gotten rid of Kidnapped.
Yeah.
Well, Studio 60 is doing worse. I think I said this last week, and it's a continuing trend. Every half hour that Studio 60 is on the air, it loses viewers.
Yeah, it is. I say it's a horrible show.
Well, they actually had something that was really kind of interesting on the episode a week ago. It was a focus group, and one of the premises that they were talking about in the show, I believe the number they said was that if a show loses 10% of its viewers from one week to the next, the show is dead. Mm. And this is what they're saying on the show, talking about their fictional TV show. Mm. At the same time, in real life, Studio 60 lost 30% of its viewers.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that's... And then what about Brian? What about Brian's popular because that guy, he's from Seventh Heaven. He's real popular with the girls and all that, right?
Right.
And... Yeah. 6 Degrees, that show, that show is not doing as well as they thought either, right?
Right. It continues to drop week to week. Mm-hmm. It started out at 12.6 million viewers, and it's down to 9.7. So, again, dropping week each week.
Yeah.
Now, another interesting thing that I caught just in the statistics, it isn't an actual TV show, but the Katie Couric News Hour has been kind of a big... big deal. When she first came out, she had 13 million viewers that first day and that first week, and she's down to about 7 million now. So
yeah, the novelty wears off, and then people got to see if they want to come back and see her, you know, sitting there doing the news, you know.
Right.
And then what do you call it? Lost. Now, how's Lost doing? That just came back. I'm not into Lost. I say it like in concert. There's only so much television you can watch. I just don't want to get involved with Lost, you know.
Yeah, Lost is actually a really unique show. It basically seems to reinvent itself every season. I mean, the second season was totally different from the first season. And it looks like this third season is going to be totally different again. They've got the others, these people who have been on the island and kind of doing bad things in the background, and they're really being brought into the forefront. And it looks like they actually have connections off the island. They were able to get a whole bunch of records about one of the lead characters, the doctor. They were able to get those records in. So I guess we'll see a little more of this season about what they're actually doing there and kind of what the underlying plot is.
The doctor's last name is McCoy? No, I'm kidding.
Well, the thing about Lost is they do a lot of
flashbacks.
Time lapses.
Oh.
They, like, go back and forth. So, really, the whole season's only, like, 2 months where it seems like it could be a year, but it's not really that long. Because they do so many flashbacks, not much of the story is progressing because you want to get into the characters.
Yeah, that's how Galactica was. The first 2 seasons used to be, you know, oh, my God, it's only been 3 days since they left, you know, since the bombing of the colonies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know,
nobody probably knows the numbers exactly, but I think Lost, I think they're only like 30 days. They've only been on the island for like 30 or 40 days now at this point.
Have they lost viewers from this season compared to last?
Well, it did. It did actually lose... I don't have the exact numbers, but the premiere last week had 18 million. So that is a loss in viewers. But when you're talking 18 million, I mean, you know, the number of viewers they lost, a lot of networks would be really, really happy to have that number of viewers watching the show. So
part of it's probably TiVo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just if you can TiVo it, then why watch it? Mm-hmm. The other, I think, is, and probably these are people that are not computer savvy, they don't know or they don't check. The first 2 seasons were sometimes difficult and very aggravating to watch because they would take so many, not the first part, but like when they get into January, February, March, half the shows are repeats.
Yeah.
People, and I really got sick of it. And I think this season people are like, you know what, I'm just going to wait till the season's over. It comes out on DVD over summer anyways, so I'll just buy it and then just watch the whole thing in like 2 weeks.
And then... Actually, in the chat room, see, Scully Girl saying that Lost is the best show on TV. Conan Gruels is saying that Battlestar Galactica is in Lost. Looks like Battlestar Galactica in the direction it's taking. So everybody's got their own favorite shows and everything. So and then Media Boulevard magazine is doing a big splash with Lost this week as well, right?
Right. We actually had in yesterday's edition we had an interview with George Garcia. He's the heavy guy that plays Hurley, and Daniel Dae Kim, the Korean guy.
Ah.
And tomorrow we have two of the executive producers from Lost. We have an interview with them that's going to show up tomorrow. So it's kind of Lost week, I guess.
Very cool. So you can get Lost over at Media Boulevard magazine, right?
Right. What's really funny is George and Daniel Dae Kim, they seem to not you don't know how much they know and how much they just are told not to say, but it seemed like they didn't really know much more about what was going to happen than we do. So
yeah. And then the Nine, I'm not going to get involved in that one either because, you know what I mean? It's one of those procedural, you have to watch week in and week out, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's another one that is kind of paired with the Lost, and it's also another flashback. That's a bank robbery, and they flash back to what happened during the robbery. It actually opened strong with almost 12 million viewers, but that's 6 million down, so a third of the people that watched Lost tuned out when the Nine came on. So yeah, that's not a good sign, but we'll see where that goes. We've only had one episode so far.
Do you remember? I don't, but do you remember what the last year Invasion's numbers were?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have any idea how these...
Since they canceled Invasion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Invasion opened to, I think it was like 14 million. But the real story last year at this time, like three episodes in last year, what everybody was talking about was Commander-in-Chief, which the Geena Davis, the woman president show, which I really enjoyed that show. But actually, it opened up at 16 million and just dropped every week.
Dropped like a rock.
By Thanksgiving, it was down to about 12 million, and then they put it on hiatus, and it just... Never really came back.
Actually, Scully Girl's got a question for you regarding Media Boulevard magazine. She says this is an online magazine, right? You can't buy it. There is a way you get a print edition of it, right?
Well, we're doing an online edition now, and we're going to be doing a print edition. We haven't done one yet, but we're kind of in the... There's a lot of negotiation you have to do with the various print houses and just getting everything organized for that. So we will eventually be doing print magazines, but right now it's purely online.
Very cool. And then Heroes. Now, Heroes is on tonight. I didn't see the whole episode because I was going to...
Last night.
Sorry. What am I watch it on my tape, VCR, so everything's current with me. But I didn't finish watching it. I got to the part where that cheerleader, she's with that guy, and he tries to rape her or whatever, and he ends up killing her, right?
Right, he killed her again this week. He killed her last week, too.
Oh, really?
And that's the guy that Media Boulevard kind of likes him a lot. We're doing some stuff with Matt Lanter is the guy's name. He was one of the stars of Commander-in-Chief last year. He's kind of a bad guy on Heroes. But
I guess so.
Now, Heroes, that show is good, I think.
Yeah, I really...
It continues to impress me.
I like it. I really like it. It does have a feel of the 4400 to me, kind of. It has the same feel to it, you know what I mean? Because they each have these...
It's darker, and it's dark. Kind of, in some ways, scary. I mean, they have this new the serial killer who's got the powers, Filer, coming in the background.
And then that one chick's father, he's like they're mentioning it out of the way. It's her adopted father and all that. And
right.
He's like the villain on the whole show now, right?
Yeah. So he's kind of the secret villain. Now, another tie-in that NBC did that they kind of snuck in, and this was actually intentional, is this is to Friday Night Lights. I mean, they thought that those two shows were going to be really well done. But Claire, the cheerleader, is in Odessa, Texas, which is where the book, The Friday Night Lights, the real novel documentary, was actually based. So that was actually an intentional tie-in, but... Friday Night Lights. We'll have to see how that goes.
And then
Heroes is just like I said, getting better. It's holding up the ratings. It got a full season pickup, so it's the first of the new shows of the season to get a full season order.
Well, that's good. That's good. And then of course my new favorite, Jericho.
Right. Now that show is doing really well too, and I'm actually really enjoying Jericho also.
Absolutely. Everybody wrote it off. Yeah, that guy Mark Berman over at Media Week. He had it saying it was one of the first shows that's going to get canceled. And it's really... Uh-oh. Here it comes. And they only made Cylons there on Jericho, do they?
Do not adjust your set. That's
Well, Jericho pulled a Lost. They don't really have an intro. They just kind of have the Siri music with the little dee-dee to the SOS.
Yeah, and they start right away. It's a good show. I mean, it's excellent. I you're going to send me the AVI of the season premiere because a couple people at work haven't seen it yet. And I said, we got it. You know, they've seen the last two or three, whatever it was. They haven't seen the first one. I'm like, well, you got to see the first one because it kind of sets the stage for the whole, you know, for the series, you know. But it's excellent. And I did my whole special comment. I'm here my special comment. Everybody thought it was Galactica I was talking about, and it was Jericho. It's the similar premise of the two series. It's amazing how they're you know, somewhat similar premise. The colonies were wiped out by nukes, and now this Jericho, the United States is knocked out by nukes. You know?
Right. So we had a couple of important things that happened last week in the plot. They had just a few seconds of a satellite transmission of a Japanese station that showed a map of the United States. It was showing all the cities that got nuked. So they've kind of been alluding to it, but that was the first time that you actually see that it's actually a really full-scale attack on every major city.
Yeah. Now, and then, like I keep saying now, you know, now, this transmission, you know, they see this on a satellite. Is it some kind of delayed transmission? Are they picking it up, you know, because the nuclear cloud and all that, did they just pick this up? And was it a first strike against the United States? And now, did the United States respond? And now, is thereby the whole world nuked, and then, except for this little city in Kansas, you know?
Right.
We don't know. There's a lot of questions on the show. Yeah, see, they answer some questions every week, and then they give you more, you know?
Yeah, and it looks like they're kind of alluding to the fact that the enemy may actually be in the country. That seems like that's where they're going this week. Jake Green, the Skeet Ulrich, kind of the main character of it, I guess, finds a... Well, they've sent everybody out to kind of the four corners last week. They called it the Four Horsemen episode. They sent people out to just look for others and find out what information they could.
Yeah.
And apparently they find a guy on the side of the street who's got severe radiation poisoning. He's coming from Denver towards Jericho and... says they're coming, and then I guess dies or passes out.
Well, remember one guy this week or last week's episode mentioned about some tanks that he saw.
Yeah, right, five tanks going into Wichita or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And
so whose tanks are those? Are they ours, or is it an invading force coming in?
Yeah, and then you don't know, but those prisoners are on that bus. How many prisoners were really on that bus, and where are they? Right.
Right.
And then
right, you've got the real mystery with this Robert Hawkins, the black
character. Yeah. What's he up to?
Well, last
I couldn't tell what he was grabbing from the U-Haul. I mean, he had a
weapons stash. He had a huge weapons stash.
Oh yeah.
He went out when
and it looks
he basically
like,
told everybody else you cannot go outside because the radiation will kill you.
Yeah, but he went out in a suit.
Yeah, he goes out in a suit, goes to his storage place, and pulls out a whole bunch of weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, he's building a fake wall in his basement.
For that vat. Where was it? It was in that vat, the barrel. The guns he left in the thing, right?
That doesn't assume he's bad. He could be just stashing the guns in case, because you can't tell if he's a good guy or bad guy yet, really.
Right.
I mean, it's leaning towards a bad guy, but maybe he's a good guy. He's stashing the guns because he doesn't want the bad guys. He's just there to oversee.
And then they show him in the first episode putting those pins on the map of all the cities that were nuked. You know? So how did he know that? And then he was translating that Morse code too. Remember,
right.
He was figuring it out.
That's how he found. Yeah. Well, that's how he found out the.
Yeah, and he didn't share it with anybody.
Well, I think he could be a deep undercover agent where, unless something really happens, he doesn't want anyone to know who he is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's it's amazing how they you know, and then I like the interplay between Johnston. And Jake, it's kind of like Adama and Lee, you know, kind of, you know, the father thinks the son's a screw, you know,
and
all that.
Of course, you have the hot blondie.
Oh, of course. You got to have the hot blonde on there, Ashley Scott, Emily. And she's beautiful. She's a very beautiful woman.
Yeah. Now you've got the other dynamic with the other son, the good son. Skeet Ulrich's Jake Green character is kind of the prodigal son. Who went away and returned, but the other son who stayed and is the deputy mayor is having an affair with the bartender.
Yeah, he's a scoundrel. Now I have the ratings are holding strong because I got this from Mark Berman. He said from last week's episode at of interest, it did a 6.1, and they're averaging 11.38 million viewers last week. And also of note is how well Jericho is holding its audience. An impressive 94% retention of viewers from last week, which is pretty much unheard of on network television, right?
Right. It's doing very well. And, yeah. Actually, I have a little bit different numbers, but they may be from a different reading. But they're still very... The 11.4 actually was the first 2 weeks it got that. It actually went up. It had a bump the second week, which is absolutely unheard of. Mm-hmm. It's almost... shows almost across the board you can expect to drop 15% for the premiere. And it actually went up. And it maintained, I had 10.8 for last week, but that's still, that's a very good retention from week to week.
Yeah, yeah. And they second in households, 6.8. Adults, 25-54, it did real well. 18-49, it did 3.4 rating. And then Jericho, or the Fallout, the week before, did a 7.4 rating, and then the debut did a 7.5. So it's basically, it's holding its whole, whole audience. And then on the one site, they said, will Jericho beat out Heroes in ratings by season end? Because they had Heroes at 13 million viewers, and Jericho's 11.38 million.
Right.
So, and then in Australia, it's received 940,000 viewers, placing it 10th in the last September 28th's top 10 programs in Australia. So it's doing real well.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I fully expect it to be around for the full season.
Yeah, I hope so. They say you can get into this. And, you know, it's not like I can't get into Lost because it's how many years old now. I can get in this and follow along. And, it's nice. I like Gerald McCraney. He does a good job as the mayor, Johnston. The wife, Gail, that's Pamela Reed. She's a real good actress. And then IRS agent, she's pretty hot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're meet your criteria for a show.
I love it. No, it's a good show. And they got to have some good things
to
look
cool
at.
Well, it's cool when the McCraney character took that dude to the side because he's being an ass.
Oh, yeah. Punch him in the gut. And McCraney, I don't know if he's got the flu or is he sicker than he's letting on. What do you think?
I thought it was going to be a heart problem or something, the way they're playing it. But then they came back and said he had the flu. But I think he's going to be sicker. And I think
Go ahead.
Now, how many weeks, how many more weeks will they go before they tell him to shoot the rest of the... Because right now what the... Most of the show is what, shot about 12 episodes?
Yeah.
No, well, they pretty much give a 13-episode order, and most of the shows are kind of in the... They're filming episode 7 or 8 right now.
Mm.
So when do they... Will it be January before they say, okay, shoot the rest?
No, it should be within the next week or two.
Yeah,
they already gave... Heroes got extended, and they're expect. I know on the one site, they said any day now. CBS is probably after tomorrow's episode. They're probably, once the ratings come, they'll extend the season.
Yeah, I'd say that's entirely possible that they'll go ahead and get a full season order.
Now, do you really want more episodes of Jericho? Like I said, do you want 22 or do you want the 13? You want to have quality episode 13 quality episodes versus not 13 good ones and 9 half.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But,
like Galactica
on the major network. So, I mean, if they only have 13 and then end it, that means the series is over. They won't come back. So if it's going to keep going, they have to do the. Somewhere around 20 at least.
Yeah, because I think when they pitch the shows, they have to pitch a 20-show idea, right?
Right, and that has to do with the ad sales that are done at the upfront in May. They, the advertisers actually do an initial buy of time, and there's a certain commitment that they'll air at least the 13 shows.
Yeah, it's not like cable shows like Rescue Me. Well, even Rescue Me is probably close to 16, but I know the first... season was probably only 12 episodes, maybe.
Yeah, most shows either go 10 or 13.
Yeah, and then Scully Girls saying Heroes is so much better. Well, they're two entirely different shows. Heroes is more of a sci-fi, fantasy type of a show, and Jericho is more of a taking a premise, the nuking of the country and maybe the world and how this little town survives. And then Inventor saying they're complaining to each other about who owes what taxes and investigation to the clinic, and have just been nuked. They said I saw the video of the producers. They said they're going to see how life goes on for these people. After they've been nuked, I don't think they really realize the extent of what's happened to them.
I really do enjoy Heroes, but I also really enjoy Jericho. I think there's definitely room for both shows on there, and Friday Night Lights too. Even though I'll watch that as long as it's there. I'm just happy. I'm really happy with this season so far.
Yeah.
There's some really good stuff out there.
Yeah, I like the premise, and I've been kind of harping it, putting it on the boards and stuff. So hopefully I'll get it some more viewers. You get some more attention out there. And then also big news is we mentioned at the beginning of the program that Google's buying YouTube, huh?
Right. And that deal actually has been rumored for a few days, and they actually, from what I understand, closed the deal today, $1.65 billion
wow.
in stock at Google. So I don't know. They're doing something right there.
Unbelievable.
But there's also another piece of news that came out, not quite as big a deal in light of the sale, but I thought it was really interesting. Yeah. A few weeks back, NBC made a deal. Well, first off, NBC filed a lawsuit against YouTube to take down all their copyrighted material.
Huh.
Then they backed off from that and made a deal with them that the NBC would put promotions on YouTube just because the audience is so big. But the NBC CEO has been sniping at YouTube ever since they did that. You know, he can't let it go. But they made a deal with him. He's constantly making little snide remarks about the YouTube is really violating copyright.
Huh.
Well, CBS came in. They took a totally different approach for it. They basically made YouTube implement something that will detect CBS content. So somebody watches Jericho and posts the first 20 minutes of it online, for example.
Mm-hmm.
CBS's deal is any advertising that YouTube or now Google does over that content, CBS gets a part of it.
Really?
So that's really smart marketing, and I mean, YouTube has just exploded. We've actually been using it on the STD
mm-hmm.
radio site. You've seen it's just so easy, so convenient to integrate into a website, and it's a really cool service. So,
well, hopefully, and then here the big thing I saw that also that NBC announces. I mentioned this; it makes me mad. 2 years ago, it was about the Bionic Woman. Remember, I had Katie Sackhoff on. I told her she'd be perfect in the remake of the Bionic Woman. Somebody's listening. Because they're going to do a remake with David Icke, who's going to do the Bionic Woman, right?
Well, we'll have to see where Koenig goes with where this rumor that Koenig's got out there goes. But you know, Katie Sackhoff might be available for the part. We'll have to see.
Absolutely. And then Shirley Appleby. Who's that? Shirley
Appleby.
She owns the restaurants?
Well,
no. Don't own Applebee's?
She's one of the stars of Roswell, so she's a real favorite at Media Boulevard. But she got a pickup for a series on USA that looks like it's going to be a good one. So that was just announced this week.
Very good. And then the movies, where are we at here? Lost my place there. Departed, Martin Scorsese's movie that's with DiCaprio and Damon and Jack Nicholson, right?
Right, the really big cast. Mm-hmm. Opened at $26.8 million, which is great. And that's the best film that Scorsese has had. I think his biggest opening before was something around $10 million. But you got to look though back at, you know, still I keep going back to this. Jackass 2 opens at $29 million, and the animated cartoon, the open season, opened at somewhere close to that. So,
wow.
So I don't know what that says. We've also had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning, the prequel to that, opened at about $19 million this weekend.
No, I'll never see that. Don't worry about that. And
yeah,
then,
I'm there with you.
And then what, Man of the Year with Robin Williams?
Yeah, that's coming this week. This week we've got three big ones, The Grudge 2, which The Grudge was a remake of a Japanese horror movie, which I thought was one of the scariest horror movies I've ever seen. I mean, that's a movie, I watch it by myself and I still get the creeps.
Hmm.
They're advertising it with Sarah Michelle Gellar, but from what I understand, we're actually doing an interview with some of the cast of that for the magazine on Friday, and so one of our editors saw it, and she says that Sarah Michelle Gellar is only in the movie for about 5 minutes.
Wow.
She's got top billing. So.
Wow. And
you know what? There was a movie that came out a few months ago that person. Oh, it was the Tokyo Drift. Vin Diesel was in the first 10 minutes, and that was it.
They do that, and they tease you with that. Then you're left with the B-roll, the B-rated cast. Yeah.
Right.
And then you got the Marine with John Cena, the WWE. Do you really think that's going to do well? I don't think so.
I don't think it will either. But
no.
I kind of like him. I mean,
yeah.
He's one of the ones from the WWE that I kind of know who is and thought was a good guy. So
yeah.
We'll see.
So, well, Dr. Netranger and Media Boulevard, both let you go because Koenig is in the wings.
Okay.
All right. And we'll check out the Media Boulevard magazine and go to the board at MediaBoulevard.com, correct?
Right.
And Jerichoholics is coming soon, right?
That's right.
Jerichoholic.
Yeah, we'll make an announcement here on this radio show. But we're going to start a fan site, and we're going to let Sean lead it, I think.
Absolutely.
Jerichoholics, or what is it, Jerichoholics?
Well, I don't know. I think you have it different than I was saying it, but Jerichoholic.
We'll figure it
like
out.
Like an alcoholic, but Jerichoholic.
Trademark infringement.
Oh, WWE?
There. You might.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, all we'll right. Let you go.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, have a good night. Thank you. And that was Dr. Netranger, the mad rocket scientist, and we'll be joined in a few minutes by Koenig Rules with a Galactica Who update. No, I really enjoyed it, Jericho, because as I say, it had the same kind of a dark premise of Galactica. So, and it just said, everybody, oh, it's not the same as Galactica. Yeah, I know it's not the same, but the same general premise. It's a very, very dark premise, you know, the destruction of your city. And how you carry on after that, you know, and you know, some aspects of life's carry on because I don't think they've grasped what's happened to them. You know, the IRS agent, she says, "You still owe me $100-something thousand." I think it's her way of holding on to sanity that life hasn't changed that much. How about when she pulled up her hand? She had her hand in the building, and she goes, "What's this stuff?" And everyone says, "That's Denver." Yeah, and then I think that hit her that, oh, it's the end of the world. How do you get a plane back to D.C.? So I think slowly we're going to see these people react. It's a big cast, too. You got a lot going on for this. You know, in the cast, they got that lady owns the grocery store and how they came in. The grocery store is wiped out, Gracie. And then that guy came back from being at that chick's house, the mansion. And at the end of the episode, he wound up because they cooked all the food because her refrigerating unit was out. And they cooked all the food for the city, and I like that Gracie character because at least they could have done is thank me. Yeah, you know, here we are, the civilization's wiped out, and she's saying at least they could have done is thank her for the food. So I mean, you got, you know, how would you react? Would you, you know, hold on to, you know, your sanity, to a regular life as long as you can, you know, like that Gracie is doing? You know, and now that guy, that boy, went off and found her shipment. In that train, stop train. And where is everybody? Where are the bodies? You know, and like Jake stopped, he was going out of town, and he stopped because the jet was in the middle of the street, and the other one was crashed behind him. Did he see bodies? And they really didn't say, did he see bodies? So anyway, I think we're joined by the professor. Wow. And Dr. Koenig Rules, are you there, sir? Oh, here he comes. We're going to merge them together. We'll get sued for trademark infringement. Dr. Koenig Rules.
Yeah, something to Galactica.
Galactica.
Resetting.
Yes, they crossed over. Yes, we crossed over Who and Galactica. Over. You came in on the ship, and the TARDIS landed on the Galactica. How about that?
Oh, my God.
All you're missing now is Muffet.
You didn't see it in the first episode of Battlestar? You didn't see the blue box in the background?
They might need it pretty soon, huh? What do you think?
Yeah, and I think they'll probably put a werewolf on board, too.
Werewolf. And they'll crash land on Earth, and they'll look up the sign and say, "Welcome to Jericho."
That's right. And Queen Victoria will be there, too.
And then a Stargate will show up in the background, too. They'll merge them all together, huh?
Yeah.
So what did you think of this? Now, it felt different to me, this season premiere. I don't know. You know, that opening scene, I thought it was a little too much of that, you know, that sex that Ellen was having with Cavill. I think it was a little too much, I thought.
Yeah, and I think the scene with Katie and Leoben were pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a more serious feel to it, that's for sure. Not saying that the miniseries
mm-hmm.
was bad either. I think the miniseries also had a serious feel to it, but it was a little bit less serious than this season three. Season three has gotten really serious now.
Yeah.
I think the one interesting thing about these two Galactica episodes is that more on the Cylons is being focused on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, just the characters of all the Cylons that you have so far, that they're in groups now talking about things. Even I noticed the special effects with a couple of sixes there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's good in terms of the effects that they can do that now with the split screen. But it's good. It's still good. I think they backtracked to the miniseries between Adama and his son, where there was, if you remember in the miniseries, a lot of friction between dad and his son, and it looks like they've come full circle again where there's a lot of friction now between Lee and his father.
Yeah,
again.
Especially when he called him a fat ass. You know?
Yeah, well, he is a fat ass.
Yeah, and they show him in a damn towel and everything. Like, holy crap. What's with this guy? Even when he's fat, they have to put him in a damn towel. Yeah. And then what else? And they open that scene. The opening scene bothered me because it was, you know, and they show her with the sores on her face. And like, oh, my, what is this? She's got an STD or something. I mean, what's going on with Ellen? You know?
Or maybe she's being abused by Cavill.
Could be. No. And, you know, how many of the Cavills is she servicing? Is it just the one or is it, you know, five of
never
them?
Never know, do you?
Yeah.
Because it could be different mottos that are copies. Oh, I'm sorry, different copies that are going into the room.
And I like the one where Starbuck kills Leoben, she eats her meal with the bloody hand, and she uses the napkin and puts that in her lap. That was kind of a funny little scene there, you know. Like she wipes her lips with the napkin, and while she's got the bloody hand, I thought that was a pretty cool scene too.
Right, and
I still
the
enjoy
the other Leoben copy comes in and says, "Honey, I'm home."
You keep killing me. It's five times you've killed me. I keep coming back. So
it was pretty dark, but it was funny too.
How about her daughter now? They brought back the storyline.
Well, let's put it this way: Leoben is sort of tricking her into thinking that's her daughter, but from what I understand, that's not really her daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is not her daughter at all.
So we do.
Well, first of all, I mean the kids. Like, how old is the kid?
They didn't really establish how old she is.
She can't be that old.
I
mean, that kid's a couple years old. Mm-hmm. If this only takes place a year later.
Near and 6 months later.
Yeah,
I
mean, there's no possibility that can be her kid.
Yeah, unless they're playing something, you know, games with the time. I don't know.
Right, right. But it's not supposed to be her kid, but he's trying to convince her that that's her kid. So he's trying to do a number on her.
Well, I liked how they went back and they brought that storyline back forward with the missing ovaries, you know. And then, of course, Ty. Now, Ty, you know what? He's kind of the star of these first two episodes because he's like every other scene, you know.
He's part of the resistance, and I think he's relying less on the alcohol now and more on his skills as a military leader. So
good for
he
him.
Always had it in him, but now he's gravitating toward action. I like that because he's a good actor, and it looks like he's overcoming his addiction.
Yeah. Now, how can you not watch that and see that he was the star of those 2 hours? You know, anybody can be blind not to notice that. I mean,
yeah, and the chief too. Chief Tyro is also a major player.
True.
As well.
Well, we always knew Tyro was a strong character, but Ty always knew was the drunk and the big mouth who's reckless and all that.
Right.
And now he comes out and they come into that scene in the back cave, wherever it is, underneath the tent there. And he said, you're going to ask me. They gouged it out and they threw it on the floor. He said, look like a hard boiled egg there on the floor. That was good.
Like the one guy that we just had on.
Yeah. Net Ranger?
Yeah.
Everybody's got nicknames. Net Ranger, yes.
How he was stating from that one Israeli article how the good guys are now the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because now you don't know. Now the humans are doing all the suicide bombings now. At Ty's orders, and now you don't know. Are we going to end up rooting for the Cylons now over the humans?
Well, they're saying on some of the boards that. This is an anti-American type of story now because you're rooting for the terrorist bombers, whereas before it's just a reverse of here in America where the Iraqi bombers and stuff like that are the enemy. I don't see the anti-American view toward the show. I think what some people are missing, those that really hate the show, well, number one, they're biased against it.
Yeah.
I mean, they will try to find anything whatsoever. But number two, I think even more importantly, that in times of war, you've got to fight your enemy at all costs whatsoever, and you have to do certain things to kill your enemy that ordinarily you would not do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what some people are missing here, that you can't play nice with the Cylons, I mean, you've got to even sacrifice your life and do the terrorist bombing to try to destroy as many of the Cylons as possible.
Yeah.
So I think it was a necessary action. I didn't see it was anti-American.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are reading into the show and seeing all sorts of propaganda. Mm. You know.
Well, I think that, well, they see the suicide bombers, and that's tying in with the Iraq business. And then
I know,
but
I don't think it's as simple as that, right,
yeah.
Sean? I mean,
no.
I don't think you. And you do a political segment for an hour.
Uh-huh.
I think you would disagree with that just as much as I would.
Yeah.
It's supporting the terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see this show as doing that.
It's just a sci-fi show.
Yeah, it's a,
yeah,
it's a TV
it
show.
It is. It's not reality, but what they're doing is taking
this
some of the headlines of reality.
Last time I checked, Kiefer Sutherland wasn't on Battlestar.
Yeah, last we checked. He knows. He might show up. You don't know. But then... it was good. I mean, just that opening scene bothered me, you know, with it, you know. I could see the scene having sex with cocaine, but it had to go on and on and on. You know what I'm saying? And I think that went a little too long. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess part of the show that what they're trying to do is not to belabor the issue, but go back to the roots, because it was a little bit off color the first season, mm-hmm. if you remember.
Yeah, so maybe they're going
and
back.
And interestingly, that first season was when it had the high rating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
now, what do you think about that? I mean, the ratings really.
Well, the ratings for Friday night.
1.8.
And now, remember, it's competing against a lot of premieres of shows and shows on other stations and baseball, I think, too.
Yeah.
1.8, according to my source from the BSG set, 1.8, they're pleased with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, a lot of the Stargates did not even achieve that. I think one of the highest was like 1.7, but most of the Stargates hovered around 1.5, 1.6.
Mm.
1.8 is pretty much like the season 2 cliffhanger, where part 1 was 1.8 and part 2 was 1.9. So statistically speaking, it hasn't gone down from the end of season 2 to the start of season 3. So it's maintained in its core audience.
Mm-hmm.
The point is now, is will it be able to capture more of an audience? Does sci-fi want that, more of the audience, or will it be comfortable just accepting the core audience and
yeah.
moving on? For instance, Eureka started out at 2.6 or something, really high.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second to the last episode was down to a 1.7 or 1.8. So Eureka dropped
mm-hmm.
from really high to 1.7, 1.8. Now, I'm not sure what the finale was, but
mm-hmm.
if 1.7, 1.8 is where most of these shows are going to be hovering around, they're not going to cancel Galactica
yeah.
because they it might be too risky to start something else that doesn't even achieve that.
Yeah, well, and see, I don't know, because the show's so expensive. I say there's sci-fi.
It is expensive, and I've heard that it's really hard to get this into syndication.
Mm-hmm.
That again, you'd have to. It's like Babylon 5, I guess, the closest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you lose a season, forget it. But one of the things is it's doing well. I don't have the numbers. It's doing well though in DVD sales, and so I think, you know, I mean, the way they promoted. Items like DVDs and books and things like that. I think it's got its niche. I think it's got its market. It's never
yeah.
going to be generating, let's say, the numbers of the ratings of Heroes
yeah.
on
yeah.
NBC.
Well, the latest rumor is that another rumor is rumbling around that they're going to move it to NBC again behind
that
the
I
Heroes.
That I heard from my source is full of crap.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
really. I mean, the person told me this is full of crap. I know you're reading this on the board.
Mm.
There is a mid-season replacement, right? There is no way they're going to move this thing to NBC.
No, because it bombed the last couple times. Well, they did it with the reruns, but
still,
you know. And I think a lot of people are saying, because the sci-fi did a big PR campaign, you know, the full-page ad and the TV guide. And they thought
yeah.
they'd get in more viewers, you know, with the Peabody Award and
mm-hmm.
all this stuff. And then it didn't... bring in any additional viewers when they did all the story so far and all that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you could see it from the perspective of that
mm-hmm.
it didn't bring any more viewers. You could see it from the perspective, too, that maybe it did lose a little bit of its core audience, and maybe it did gain a couple new viewers too. But again, Friday night, 8 to 10 is a long 2-hour segment, a long 2-hour block of time to do. I think they realize Doctor Who is a feed into the show, but they don't have any expectation that Who will ever do as good as Battlestar.
No.
And in fact, I thought it was interesting that after they showed the show, the 2-hour show, they repeated the 2-hour show. They didn't put the Who back on, but they repeated the Battlestar, and then they put the Who on, time at midnight, after the re-airing of the Battlestar.
Yeah. And
so they realized that Battlestar is their bread and butter for Friday
and they've re-aired it like three times since. So, and what about Doctor Who before we run out all the time? I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah, Doctor Who was cool, you know, that they traveled to Queen Victoria's era, and that Queen Victoria might have been a werewolf. I mean, I remember reading that rumor somewhere in the history books and things like that. The CGs were excellent with the werewolf. I mean,
incredible.
I mean, it reminded me of any new horror film like Van Helsing, which I saw, and it's sort of like it bordered on that. But they're going into the gothic more, the supernatural. And I mean, they're even going to meet Satan, the devil, in a two-parter coming up. So, I mean, they're going into a lot of horror creatures, the mythos behind a lot of those horror films and horror myths. And that's what I like about Doctor Who, that they're able, and Tennant as Who is excellent. I didn't. I think you noticed it, but when he was in the library, he's looking at the books, and he pulls out his glasses and starts looking. And I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
That Tennant, while young, can give you the scholarly look.
Yeah,
as well.
It's incredible. And I like the whole thing. That, you know, it's still the TARDIS manages to screw up because he wanted to take her to 1979 London to a rock concert, and then the damn thing ends up taking him to 1879. So
right.
I like that. Every once in a while, the TARDIS screws
up.
And then how, at the end, Queen Victoria starts Torchwood.
They are going to make references to Torchwood in every episode now.
Yeah.
And I saw the trailer to Torchwood too. It looks like because it's going to start up this month.
Yeah.
In England, it looks pretty good, and it looks like Captain Jack has a whole team of people that he's leading to fight alien invasions and things like that. So it's different from Doctor Who, but again, it sort of has like an X-Files thing to it. I think it's going to be good. I like Captain Jack.
And now, have we got any confirmation of Sci-Fi's picking that up or not?
Not yet.
No.
But my guess is because SG-1 is on the way out, and because Who Season 3 won't be available till probably next fall, that they will want some type of lead-in or something to complement. They're going to have SG-1 in Stargate Atlantis. But what they might do is
put Torchwood in the middle of all that, huh?
They might put Doctor Who with the two of those, which I think would be a much more enjoyable combo. Because now Torchwood is much more serious. And so then they would need the lighter Stargates to offset it.
Now, I heard somebody saying that Robin Hood's coming to U.S. too.
Yes. Yeah,
that'd be cool. Because
I told you about Sarah Jane, right?
Yeah,
the
she's
the
getting
new
her
Adventures
own.
Of Sarah Jane,
yeah.
Which is sort of a kids' program, but again, a third Who type of series that is going. They're going to make a special, followed by a series of 13 episodes.
And before you really, somebody, a question from the chat. How's your book coming?
How's my book coming?
Aren't you writing a text about Galactica?
Yes, about Battlestar. Yeah, it's coming. I mean, I still need to get in touch with my co-editor because some of the I'm not sure if she has sent edited versions back to some of the authors, but it's coming along.
It's
moving along slowly but surely.
Very cool. Now, what are we looking forward to next week? This coming week with Galactica.
Well, the third episode, which the third of four episodes actually, with New Caprica. So. And I believe this episode is also a to-be-continued one as well.
Oh.
So My guess is it's going to be leading up to the fourth episode where Galactica and Pegasus retrieve the Galacticans on New Caprica. So the fourth week, I think, is going to be an absolute dynamite week. So this third week, it will probably be leading up to the fourth week.
The big build-up for,
yeah,
the for the rescue,
so
and everything.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And,
well, Koenig, well, I hear the TARDIS coming for you.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Okay. Very excellent analysis. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Off he goes. Thank you. And that was the Professor Koenig Rules with our review of Galactica and Doctor Who. And in the morning is, thank you everybody for listening to the program. And tomorrow morning is Daily Noise. Friday is Spankwagon, followed by King Hesh. And subject to discussion at lvrocks.com. And the website is s2dradio.com. Go over to Media Boulevard and check out everything they have there with the magazine.